Coming up on today's show.
All these years, I was my job. I was my goal. I was my dreams. I was who I'm hanging out with. Because like I say, I've been blessed to, you know, hang with the best. But that's what you do. It's not who you are.
Station called a starting line. He says, Dale Jr., yeah, he's all right.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account.
Sweet tea, hon, she says, them singers you hear today, well, they ain't great, they're just okay.
Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from north of Charlotte, North Carolina, my guest is a songwriter and author who lived in Nashville for 15 years before moving to his current location. His book, A Crazy Journey and Finding My True Identity, came out last December and captures his 40-plus years in various facets of the music industry and sports and entertainment, plus other areas of life, meeting and working with some of the most famous people. My guest wrote a country Christian song that went to number one after he moved out of Nashville, where he had hosted 120 events for songwriters and the music industry at his home 112 consecutive months from 2003 to 2012. He has had over a dozen songs recorded for artists' projects, including on Sirius XM and RFD TV. You've been hearing a song he wrote called Got the Talking Part Done. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Doak Turner.
Bruce, it's a pleasure to be on your show, man. You have a fantastic show. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you so much, Doak. Thank you. I appreciate you making time to talk with me today. We have a lot to cover, but I want to be sure to give you the opportunity first to tell the audience about the song that was just playing called Got the Talking Part Done.
Yes, that there's a lot of great memories with that song. Wrote it in Nashville with three people that are from Orange County, California, Bev and Cliff Nelson and Dee Briggs. And Cliff and I had started it in Nashville when he was there for visiting to write and so forth. Mark Allen Barnett, our friend, you know Mark, I think he was on your show, helped put us together and then made the introduction. But we wrote that song, got the talking part done. Mark helped introduced me to Jay's Play Studio on Music Row, and we put the demo together. Danny Myrick sang that demo. In 2007, I helped host a songwriters event at George Jones's place in his barn, George Jones University. And so I was a host for that and speakers. And I met a gentleman that you've also had on your show, Ryan Weaver.
Yeah.
And gave him a CD. And I got a call a week later, said, Doak, I would like to cut this song.
Well, I've got some follow-up questions here. For openers audience, I want you to hear a Doak singling out who sang the demo version, because that's what you just heard, audience, is the demo version. So that's not the Ryan Weaver version. And Ryan, as Doak just said, was on this show way, way, way back at the beginning, episode 20. But Doak, continue with this, because I also want you to explain to the audience what the song is about, because I was talking over the song as it was playing in the intro and didn't play the whole thing. So please continue.
It's about these people. Actually, Cliff and I were talking. He was a football coach at a high school in Orange County. We started talking about, the players talk before the game and all of that, what they're going to do. I said, they got the talking part done, don't they? And so we just went from there and showed three different episodes of the bridge, three different stories of somebody that had a talking part done. What we're doing is just trying to encourage people to go for your dreams. Go ahead, stop waiting and go forward and go for those big dreams that you have. So, right now you have the talking part done, but take that action and make them happen. And that's what we did with that song. We had it, Danny Myrick. was cutting demos, demo singer in town in Nashville. And he later went on to write several hit songs, number one songs. And he's just a great guy. And so Ryan heard that song, like I mentioned, at the George Jones Songwriters Camp, George Jones University. Gave me a call, said he wanted to record it. Went to Jay's place. We used those same tracks.
Mm.
He sang it. And then I had a friend that was programming Sirius XM radio. I'd met him years earlier when I worked for NASCAR Country Radio Network. And Smokey Rivers was now working for Sirius XM. He said, "Doak, I have a show on Saturday nights at 10. I feature a lot of new songs. They do not have to be signed artists. I listen to indie. If it's a good song, I want to play it."
Mm.
And so those dreams came true.
Wow.
He played it on Sirius XM, and earlier that week, Ryan had it played in his home station down in Florida. And the next week, I had it played on my home station in Charleston, West Virginia, ironically, at the same building where I used to sell radio for 4 years. And they played it every week. They said it was a country station, and it competed against another station. Mm. It was the Wolves or the Howl, you know, Howl or Growl. And so I won every day for a week. So that was fun to beat out some girl named Taylor Swift on one of her new songs and others.
But tell me this, though. When you gave that CD to Ryan Weaver, were you just giving him the CD and saying, "Here you go, enjoy this"? Or was it, no, I wanted to see if he had any interest in cutting anything that was on there.
Yeah, I gave him a CD. It's about 4 or 5 songs. And that one stood out to him because, you know, he's an energetic performer. So there we go. That's the story. And it was just the greatest thrill to call my parents, call my friends. And I was at an event that Saturday night at Gibson Guitar. They had a big event over there. And me and about 4 or 5 friends went and cranked it up with my car stereo away from the event. And we are about 10:40 that night. And that song comes across my Sirius radio.
Mm.
We're all just, I have tears. And, you know, just a lot of hugs. And one girl was taking pictures of it, seeing it go across the screen.
Wow.
They were like, "Well, that song's scribbled." And so it was a thrill, and it was a proud moment. And I went home to West Virginia the next week and was interviewed on the radio with a friend
Too
of mine
cool.
that I used to work with up there.
Too cool.
So, yeah, dreams came true. Dreams came true.
Audience, this week's episode is a great example of not only what a small world it is, especially in the music industry, the longer that you're in it, but of why it's important to stay connected to people and not make a bad first impression. Doak, in the intro, I mentioned that you hosted 120 events for songwriters in the music industry at your home 112 consecutive months from 2003 to 2012. Our mutual friend, Mark Allen Barnett, who has been a guest on the show twice, he invited me and a client of mine to your home for one of those events back in 2012, or maybe it was late 2011, but either way, you and I became Facebook friends after I came to your house then, and you wrapped up hosting all of those. Just share with the audience how and why you had launched that in the first place, those 112 consecutive months, as well as what those gatherings were.
I moved to Nashville October 2002. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I just know I had some money saved. I sold my condo. You're talking about leaving your comfort zone and going for your dreams. I had a nice condo that's on Lake Norman, North Carolina. I sold it, moved, went for that dream. And one Sunday, I had a roommate. His name was Gary Talley. And Gary is a guitar player for the Box Tops, who are crazily still playing the song "The Letter" and "Cry Like a Baby."
Hmm.
He had a friend visit us one Sunday and was telling me about an event he used to do in New York about once a month, invite friends over. They had to bring, you know, a covered dish and bring a new song to get the spaghetti. I said, "Well, I don't want to cook spaghetti every week." But that's so I just started invited. Actually, that December, I invited 30 people that were new to Nashville to come to my house. I said, "We all got to get to know each other.
Wow.
We're new. This is our crew here." And so they came over. And that Sunday afternoon in early March, I was sitting around like, "Man, I miss having like a Sunday dinner with my family."
Mm.
So I invited them back over, and about 50 people maybe, to come over. I said, "Bring something to eat." We sat around and played songs in four rooms of the house and outside. And that was March of 2003. Well, April came along, is going to do it again, but Tin Pan South, the NSAI big songwriters event that lasts all week for songwriters, I said, I'd like to see some of my friends that Sunday after it ends on Saturday night. So I went and bought 50 pounds of barbecue. I said, bring some food and beverages over. About 150 people showed up. And so I called that one the Guitarbecue. And I did that annually for the next 7 years of where Tin Pan South ended on Saturday night. That final one in 2009 of the Guitarbecue brought about 650 people. Thank God I had a church right across the street with a big parking lot.
But the third Sunday of the month gathering is where people were coming over your house for 112 consecutive months. Was that just word of mouth? How were people showing up month after month after month for 112 consecutive months? Because I would think that it could get out of hand and people start showing up. And I can't imagine, and I'm putting this in the form of a question, I can't imagine that you stood there and looked at every person that came in the door to make sure you knew them, because you were a networker, so you were probably happy to see new faces. But as I said, there's got to be a point where you say, hey, this can't get too out of hand because I've only got one house here.
Well, the average became about 100 people.
Mm.
And how I promoted it is I had started that year something called the Nashville Muse. Now, remember my friends I mentioned that I co-wrote that song with from Orange County? Well, that January, I went out to Orange County and San Diego also and taught a songwriting workshop. When I was having dinner at Bev and Cliff Nelson's house, Dee Briggs was there, the other co-writer on the song. They had some other friends for dinner. And one of the guys, at Rex, said, Doug, why don't you do what I do out here? I said, what's that? He said, ask your friends, people you meet, to email you every week with where they're playing and then send that out every Monday. And that's what I started doing. Bruce, send me an email where you're playing this week. And that became the Nashville Muse. So that started with about 35, 40 people in a database, and it grew to over 3,000.
So the point of that was, let's support each other. If we're available, we'll go see each other play. But it's also, hey, the public can get on here and look at it and see that, oh, so-and-so is playing at this place on this night. I'm going to go see him or her.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that the Nashville Muse grew. My friend Stephen McClintock, that also owned that house at 701 Brook Hollow, he had a company that built websites. So he had someone, his company, build a website for the Nashville Muse. And every Monday I sent the Nashville Muse out, and also had a website with it on it and other interviews and information to help the music community.
Okay.
That's how people started finding out about it.
Okay. And audience, now that you know how Doak and I came together for this week's episode of the show, I want to take you way back because I kind of jumped ahead. Doak, I said in the intro that you lived in Nashville for 15 years. Specifically, it was 22 years ago this month that you moved to Music City, October of 2002. But take us back to the summer of 1989 and what happened in Lake Norman, North Carolina.
All right. I had been selling radio advertising in Charleston, West Virginia from 82 to 86. I wanted to move to Charlotte. I wanted to move to Lake Norman eventually, of which I did. And in the summer of 1989, I just had enough. 7 years of every day, all I thought about was selling advertising and promotions for clients. I just got burnt out and I took a hiatus. I said, I got to get away from it. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I had some money saved. I'd moved to Lake Norman, which was one of my goals and dreams. And I took that summer off. I went home to West Virginia, spent more time with family and friends up there too. And my brother had a cheap guitar. And so I took it back to Lake Norman with me. I never really played guitar.
Mm.
And it was years after that before I finally learned, but I started strumming and these lyrics started coming to me.
Mm.
And so I started writing them down. And I didn't know what to do with them at the time. I said, I just got to write stuff down. These thoughts. And I remember that first song, Come and Walk With Me. Really brilliant, I'm sure. But I started writing the lyrics down, and then they started coming. So I just started writing. I said, The good Lord will show me the way.
Okay, I have to jump in here because I have two follow-up questions based on what I'm hearing. Number one is, you said a couple times, I had my sights set on Lake Norman, North Carolina. I'm going to plead ignorant and tell you that up until today, I had never even heard of it. So how did you know about this place at Lake Norman, North Carolina in the first place, not to mention set your sights on going there someday? And number two, when you said you picked up the guitar and started strumming, 1989, YouTube wasn't around then, and you didn't say so-and-so started giving me lessons. So talk about Lake Norman, but also talk about learning to play the guitar in 1989 when you borrowed it from your brother.
Okay. In West Virginia, in Charleston, everyone in West Virginia, when they go on vacation, we go to Myrtle Beach.
Mm-hmm.
We head down south. Going to Myrtle Beach, you ended up coming down I-77 eventually when the interstate was built. And we'd go down, our family would go in the 70s, and then I started going myself in the late 70s and 80s. I'd go past this place, Lake Norman. We're past the, you know, going down the interstate, you look, and there's this big lake. Like, that's beautiful.
Mm.
Every now and then, we would stop.
Mm.
And the more I kept hearing about it, and every time I came down, I'd like, okay, I will get off this exit.
Mm.
Wow, this is beautiful. It was a very quiet area at that time. It's 25 miles north of Charlotte's where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lake Norman started getting on my mind. And I was selling radio, and I told my general manager, if Beasley Broadcast, that I work for, that owned our station in West Virginia, called Super 102, if they ever buy a station, I want to move.
Hmm.
Not because I said that, but about 6 months later, Doak, we bought a station down there, and I want you to go with us.
Oh, my gosh.
I was the number one salesperson. You know, it's got to leave your comfort zone.
Hmm.
Every month, from the time in September of 1982 till the end of January of 87, so I had it made up there. I'd read a lot of books, positive thinking books and so forth. I wanted to go for bigger dreams. I wanted to move south. Actually, whenever time I went to the beach, I'd hear those Southern girls talk. I want to hear those pretty Southern girls. I love that.
You also get their attention when you start playing a guitar and writing songs. So what about that? What about the learning to play guitar in summer of 89 when you've got your brother's guitar and you're there in Lake Norman?
I just started strumming a little bit and didn't know who to call for lessons, so I didn't take lessons for years.
Huh.
And I didn't play guitar that much. I just wrote lyrics.
Ah.
And, yeah, I just, okay, and, you know, it will eventually come. I'm going to figure out how to do that.
Wow.
And a client of mine in the radio had sent me a book. I think it was called Off the Record or something like that. And it had a little bit about the music and songwriting business, but I knew there was Bernie Taupin that wrote these brilliant lyrics for Elton John.
Yeah.
So I just needed to find my Elton John or Elton Jane.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Wow. Here is an update on my tour dates. I have been celebrating having hit the 10-year anniversary of this show back in February by going around the country on what I've been calling the 2024 NHTE Tour, 10 years of talking tunes. Last week, I announced the first tour date of 2025, January in Orlando for PodFest Multimedia Expo, where I will be a speaker. And of course, I still have the trip coming up in 5 weeks to go speak at the Las Vegas Writers Retreat. Again, that is for writers of literature, books, not music. But stop the presses, because before I continue on with other stops I'll be making in the new year, there is in fact another entry being made for 2024. Next month, November, I will be making a return to Nashville. I believe that was February, 8 months ago that I was there, but the dates are being finalized as we speak, likely the third week of November. So if you are or will be in Music City then, get in touch and let's make plans to meet up. I love meeting listeners of this show and saying thank you for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. Email me via podcast at nhte.net. or DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Doak, another important entry on the timeline for your music career is 1996. Explain to the audience what took place that year that would eventually lead to you moving to Nashville 6 years later.
I was working with a radio network called NASCAR Country. And again, I talk about how one thing leads to another. A friend of mine I worked with years earlier in radio sales in West Virginia her name is Bernie Delgado. We were close friends, great friends, worked together, like I say, in West Virginia. Years later, we both ended up moving to Charlotte and working in the industry here. She and I went to lunch in 1994, to make a short story long. But in 94, we were at lunch. You said, "Doak, how would you like to syndicate a radio network called NASCAR Country?" And Bernie and I, she never led me wrong. I said, "Sure, Bernie, let's do it." I said, "What's syndication mean?" but I knew she was always after my best, you know. And she was leaving that company, and she wanted me to come in and take over to syndicate the show. Now, while that's important in 1996, is I started going to Nashville my first couple of times to what's called the Country Radio Seminar, CRS, as we know it. And that is where the artist, it's a big convention with the artist, radio people, radio network people, program directors, the big convention. So in early 1996, at that convention, I got to Nashville early, drove around, sold a sponsorship, and was driving Music Row, and I looked over and saw this sign, said Nashville Songwriters Association International. So what's that? Well, it was a one-way street. I had to drive around the block again, which is a parking lot. You know, went in. Again, you take chances. Hey, what can I learn here? Who can I meet?
Mm.
And I didn't know what it was. And they had me have a meeting with a lady named Donna Michael, who happened to be from North Carolina.
Mm.
She told me NSAI has workshops around the country, local workshops. They teach the craft and business of songwriting and help you. I said, "Could I set one up in Charlotte if there's not one, you know, in Charlotte in my area?" So I started the NSAI workshop in Charlotte. And that grew to be the largest workshop in the, you know, the United States, with you know, over 30-35 people a month.
Wow.
Learning to craft a business.
Wow.
I would bring hit songwriters and publishers to town to do workshops.
Mm.
And so that started in 1996, which resulted in me making trips to Nashville to Tin Pan South, the big festival.
Wow.
And learning from the pros and networking.
An audience, all that from him driving past the NSAI building, the office, seeing the sign, not knowing what it was, and like he said, taking a chance. So, you know, I do a presentation called Promoting Your Music Career. I just did it at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival a couple weeks ago. And at the end, I always say, if not you, then who? And my point is that if you don't promote yourself, and yeah, you could have a publicist, but that doesn't mean you put your feet up on the desk and say, I don't have to do anything anymore. But, you know, I tell a story in my presentation about getting the podcast featured up on a roadside sign that's at a very prominent intersection where I didn't know anyone that worked there. I've never done any business with them, but I just walked in and asked, how do you get on the sign? So here's Doak saying the same thing, that, you know, you do have to kind of step out in boldness and in your own best interest and say, let me take a chance. What's the worst that can happen? Doak walks in and he learns about NSAI and decides it's not for himself, right? But at least he found out and kind of, quote unquote, did the research. So understand, audience, that most of what Doak is sharing on this episode is from his book, A Crazy Journey and Finding My True Identity, which, again, getting back to making connections, his book includes an endorsement. It's the very first one listed, actually, from Chad Jeffers, who was my guest back on episode 409 of this show. Just like the two interviews with Mark Allen Barnett, I will put a link to the episode with Chad also on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Chad is Carrie Underwood's guitar player, and he has also played with Kenny Loggins. But Doak, before we continue on with your music journey, one point in your life that people will read about in the book that I think was great experience for you by the time you did get to Nashville was all the work that you had done in radio that you've touched on a little bit. For so many years that you worked in radio, just explain to the audience why that was helpful to you as someone who in 2002 decided I'm moving to Nashville to immerse myself in the music industry.
I learned about the radio industry by selling radio, and I was the person around the station that, I'm not just about sales, I would build relationships with the jocks, with the program directors, to learn how it works, to understand them, what they look for, and so forth. And again, all of these relationships happened in radio. that was the foundation for the whole journey, because I would, one of my first goals when I started selling radio was I want to call on the civic centers, the Charleston and Huntington, West Virginia Civic Center. When I moved to Charlotte, the Charlotte Coliseums were my accounts. Well, I learned how, from building the relationships with the civic center people, they would help me when a show was coming, who's the promoter? And that was the beginning of building those relationships with the promoters and understanding the business, which led me to building relationships and trust with promoters, with the security in the building, and, you know, I would have access to get to know people and the industry.
Yeah, that's tremendous, because if you think of people who move to Nashville and they say, I'm going to be a hit songwriter and my songs are going to get played on the radio, well, somebody may cut your song and it may get played on the radio, or you might be a songwriter who is also an artist and you release music, but the only thing you know about radio is I've hired a radio promoter to try to get my songs played. So essentially, you know nothing about the inner workings of radio. And so, Doak, there you were learning all the different facets of the whole radio operation before you ever even got to Nashville.
Yes. Yes, that's what I did. I'm the guy. I was not a 9-to-5, 8-to-5 salesperson. I'm hanging out. I'm learning. I'm meeting radio people. I'm meeting record promoters when they would come to the station. I would meet the advanced people, like with Prince, advanced people, one of the stories in my book, hanging out with, getting to know them. It's not just the artist, it's not just the promoter, it's just making contacts within the entire industry, and to learn and to study and read about it. And with NSAI, I learned how the music, how the songwriting business worked. And then I read a book called The Craft and Business of Songwriting by my friend John Berhaney. And that really was one of the most solid, it's like a Bible to the songwriting industry. Talks about the craft, talks about the business. And again, making friends on Music Row once I moved to Nashville. It's a great community, as you have witnessed. People don't care if you have a number one or not. If you're a nice person, they'll talk with you. If you ask questions, they'll help you some.
I love it.
That's one of the first things we learned, and that's something that Mark Allen Barnett had taught me.
I love it.
We'd met in the late 90s.
Audience, Doak and I have laid a lot of groundwork for you here. You had a good picture of the foundation that Doak built in Nashville, right? He talked earlier about all those events that he hosted at his house every month. You heard a little bit about him moving there. But the plot twist is coming up when you hear him tell you when and why he moved out of Nashville. But first, I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from north of Charlotte, North Carolina, by songwriter and author Doak Turner. His book is called A Crazy Journey and Finding My True Identity. On the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net, I'm going to put a link to acrazyjourneybook.com, which is the website where you can not only order the book and get more information and pictures, but find more information about Doak himself. There is even a section on his website featuring audio and video of songs he wrote. At the bottom of the website, look for links for Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, Doak has lots of music on SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that this show is available on. Meanwhile, one of the platforms that I myself am available on is the Owl app. It is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. Did I mention that there is a former NFL quarterback on there? Thousands of users, experts as Owls call them, are on there. And you can connect and talk with them quickly and easily. I always like to point out the privacy element, meaning your phone number is not displayed. So as much as these calls ring through on your cell phone like a normal phone call, you decide if you want to give the person your cell number or email address or whatever, just like you would when making other types of networking efforts. This week's guest is yet another example of the power of making connections. Use the Owl app to do so for yourself and your career. And by the way, this is Owl like the bird, except with 2 W's and 2 L's. There is an article in the news section of my website with all the details about Owl, including links to download it for free from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, my invitation code is in there because that is a required field when you're setting it up on your phone. There's also a link to that article via the OWL logo at the bottom of my free weekly e-newsletter. Get on OWL and call me and lots of others today. Doak, I don't want you to reveal the plot twist yet, but what did make you decide to write your book? Was this a case of 2020, pandemic, not much else to do, or what? Because I know that's when you started it. So again, without giving away the plot twist, which we'll get to eventually, what was it that got you to sit down and not write music, but write a book instead?
Well, for years I said, I just need to write a book or something, write it down, all of these stories that I've, the experiences that I've had. You know what, maybe a niece or nephew or somebody would like to know what Uncle Doak did with his life. Or something like, I just needed to get them out of my head. Like, I'd hear a song, I'd want to tell somebody the story. Or I'd see somebody on TV or on the radio or, you know, hey, I'll tell you about the time I was hanging out with that guy. Whatever, that band, that artist, that sports figure, that wrestler, because I was a ring announcer for wrestling in the mid-'80s. So I'd be telling these stories. Or, you know, Facebook has helped with that. And finally, I just, in 2020, it became the time just to start writing everything down. So I just got a Word document, you know, on the computer, the Word, and I just started writing unedited. And I wrote it all year. And just when I was think I was done with it, oh, wait a minute, there's a song. Oh, you know, that reminds me of that time. Or I kept everything through the years. Tickets, concert tickets, backstage passes, laminates,
wow.
Everything
wow.
from events I've worked on to all, you know, all of that. And when I started writing, I said, well, I just go out and get the display. I have a lot of things framed at my garage. It's like a museum. And I would just set that in front of me, and every one of those tickets had a memory, most of them. And if I was connected with or had met those artists or entertainment or whatever, I would just write that story. Unedited. I didn't know where I was going to go with it. I was just getting it down.
Oh, so this was not you sitting down and saying, I'm going to start writing my book. This was just, I need to finally document all this in one concise place once and for all?
Yes. With eventually, I want to write the book. But right now, I don't know what to do. But yeah, this is going to be my book.
Okay.
Because I've had a crazy journey of life.
Well, there was another project of yours that we have not mentioned to this point called Music Starts Here. Explain how that came to be as well as what it was.
Living in Nashville, and as you know, there's tons of people every day, it seemed like, moving to Nashville, the music industry. Well, I'm going to be the next songwriter. I'm going to be an artist. I want to produce. And I would meet a lot of them, of course, at my house at different events. And I met someone. They came to one of my third Sundays, got to know me a little bit. Then he approached me and said, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, I went to the Chamber of Commerce meeting, and he said, and we were talking about the people that come to town, and a lot of times, as you know, there's scammers, there's people that don't have your best interest, they're going to make you a star or whatever, and it's going to take a lot of the money. And people are getting ripped off, and the Chamber of Commerce knew about it. So we need to come up with something to help. And so me and that gentleman and about five or six of my friends, we got together a couple of times at my house in West Mead, and Mark Allen Barnett was one of those people. Said, what is the music industry? What is it? What do people need to know? And so we made a list. The music industry here is artists, it's songwriters, it's publishers. It's the business, the music business. We broke down to about six different areas. Okay, now what can we do? Okay, well, let's build a site somehow. And I'll go out and interview these pros, a lot of them are my friends, and ask for advice. And that was the next step. We started going and taping interviews, sitting down with these pros, the Musicians Union, to the ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, to, like I say, the hit songwriters, publishers, the technicians, everyone, some of the artists, give us some advice. And I would interview them, you know, one-on-one, or a client came along and said, why don't you do that at my store, a music store?
Mm.
I interviewed some of the big hit writers. You know, I'd start the interview with a question that they'd never heard is, if it was I was interviewing you, I'd say, Bruce, What's that first song you remember that made you say, I don't know what that is, but I got to do it?
Mm.
And they and they would get a big smile and respect back to their childhood. Like, okay, this is going to be fun, you know, they would be thinking. And talk about their journey and give some advice. At the music store, they would perform some songs. Sometimes get some musicians. We would give them the advantage, pick out a couple of names from the audience, come up on stage. You play a song, and the hit writers will play a song. Give you a little experience of being on stage with a hit writer and playing your songs while they played theirs. And so that started to grow. So we started that site. We launched it in 2010, 3210, March 2nd, 2010, something like that. And, you know, about 100 people showed up at the opening party. And one thing led to another, so that became the resource. And now if you look on YouTube, there's about 400 of those video segments.
Whoa.
With a lot of pros and cool people.
Whoa.
Yeah, so we started that and would host events you know, half a dozen times a year, maybe for networking, you know, networking in the industry. Well, we're going to interview some hit writers. Well, how does this work? How did you write that song? Give us, so we would do, instead of just video, it was free workshops for the business and, you know, the hit writers. And then I started doing it with a guy named Rick Barker that had managed Taylor Swift. We did 19 free artist workshops.
Wow.
At one of my clients at the time called Two Old Hippies. And for artists could come and get free advice from different people in the industry.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So let's go for the plot twist now. We've heard so much about how firmly entrenched in the Nashville music scene you were. In fact, although you moved back to Carolina at the end of 2017, you were still making trips to Nashville until the end of 2019. So tell us about the decision to leave Music City, as well as the revelation that completely changed how you looked at yourself.
It was just time to move back. I have an incredible, wonderful woman named Kathy that we'd been dating long term, and this was actually our third time getting back together, but I knew I'd come to my senses about what's most important in life. Rent was going up in Nashville, sponsors weren't coming along, things like that. It was just tough changes. And so I decided, hey, I'm going to move back. She said, well, you can move back here. So I moved back to Charlotte, but I was still making trips for our events, the Music Starts Here events, and writing and pitching and so forth. But it was time to move back. And so I did. And then it started, you know, slowing down the business and everything. And I have been blessed to work with some of the greatest names in music and entertainment, you know, from Paul McCartney, done events, the things with, you know, so many people in sports and entertainment, tennis, to whatever. But through this incredible journey, I felt like a failure, Bruce. I felt like I failed in life. I did not get that big hit song I went for. I thought by now I would be a big hit writer, very successful, not one, but several number one songs because my friends had done it.
Mm-hmm.
Things just didn't work out. I felt like I failed my family, my friends, those that believed in me. Like I failed myself because I know I made a lot of mistakes.
Wow.
Through the years. A tough business partnership ended. It was time to end that and break that completely off. So what am I now? Because all of my life, Bruce, my identity, and where I say in the book, Crazy Journey of Finding My True Identity,
yeah.
My identity has always been my job. When I'm selling radio, I'm the number one salesperson. I'm the guy that's cool going backstage, meeting everybody. La-di-da-di-da. I was the ring announcer for NWA Wrestling in the mid-80s. So got all those stories and some friends to, you know, it was always my career. I'm the guy hanging around all the NASCAR people. I'm in the garage. I'm in the pits. I'm on top of the, watching the spotters do their, you know, I had access.
Mm-hmm.
I've been blessed to become friends with some people in the industries that are everlasting relationships. I've done all of that. And Bruce, I felt like a failure because that was my identity. What do I do now? That's all I've done for 40 years, just about. Somehow been connected to all of that.
And so how did you reach the point that you did reach where you did find peace and you did find your true identity?
My awesome woman, Kathy, gave me a book called You Are Beloved by Bobby Schuller. Bobby's grandfather was Robert Schuller, the minister at Crystal Cathedral, and I used to watch him in the 80s and 90s, read his books, listen to his tapes. And so Robert's grandson, Bobby Schuller, had that book. Kathy said that might be of interest to me. And so I read that book. It had the identity statement in it. And reading that a couple times, reading the stories, and just learning your identity, what it truly is, it helped save me and let me know what was going on. Is identity, I am not what I do. I am not what I have. I am not what others say about me. I am a beloved child of God. I will not hurry. I will not worry. And after reading that and repeating it and writing it down and looking at it, I came to learn that our goals, our dreams, our job, all those things we do, that's what we do. It's not who we are. But all these years, I was my job. I was my goal. I was my dreams. I was who I'm hanging out with. Because like I say, I've been blessed to, you know, hang with the best. But that's what you do. It's not who you are.
Wow.
And I've spoken to people about that.
Wow. So I'm curious. A lot of people use the expression, they say a God incident instead of a coincidence. But I'm curious about the timing of the discovery that you made that you just described for us versus the country Christian song that went to number one after you moved out of Nashville. Is it, sorry to let you down, Bruce, like that happened right away before I made this revelation about my identity? Or is it, no, it fittingly happened after I made this revelation about my identity?
No, we wrote that song. I had two writers with it, Rob Wolf and Lawrence Sanders. Rob had passed away. He fought cancer for years. But of all things, and his wife told me this, but I told her, hey, that song went to number one. Someone else had recorded it. And then finally this Barry Burke got a hold of it and recorded it. A friend of mine, a publisher that I knew, was producing Mary and said, Doug, will you send me a couple of your songs? And so I did. And I talked to God, found its way to Mary Burke. And she recorded that song. And she promoted it and told me, said, you know what, I'm going to do a video of that song. And it's on YouTube. Two different videos of it. And Mary called me, said, Doak, we have a number one song on the country Christian charts. And I just thought, man, would Rob be, you know, Rob is smiling down. And his wife said, you know what? Of all things, Rob got a country Christian song and he's Jewish. So what made me happy with that, the happiest, the best thing was, my mom had been fighting cancer, and I told her boy finally got a number one song. And so, you know, that happened. You know, there's, I know we know there's a lot of charts, but you know what? It's a number one song. And another funny incident with that is where I lived in that house that you visited where I did the events, yeah. Stephen McClintock had owned. Well, the people that lived there before me all had number one songs. Stephen had written number one songs. Paul Jefferson wrote a number one song that lived there. The Nelsons used to live in that house. They had number ones. I had another couple friends that had number ones that lived there when I did.
Wow.
That they were my roommate. So I'm like, Stephen, I've been letting the house down. You know? I let everybody down. And then I said, it went to number one. I said, you know what? It's a number one on a chart. You number one writer. So I felt good about living in the house. I didn't let everybody down.
And I think that if we're talking about the same Rob Wolf, I met him many, many years ago. I believe it was either at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival or at the Frank Brown International Songwriters Festival. And audience, by the way, the song that Doak is referring to, I Talked to God, I mentioned before that I'm going to have a link to acrazyjourneybook.com. On the website that I'm referring to, if you click into the About Doak section, there's a video page on there, and I Talk to God is on there by Mary Burke, so you can go and find it that way.
clarify for us, Doak, do you still write songs? Do you make any trips to Nashville anymore? Are you still working in music in any capacity? Just paint a picture for us of Doak Turner and music in late 2024.
I've been playing the guitar a little bit. I just got away from it. I took a break. I had other things to do. I just needed a break from everything. You know, my focus has been on this book.
Yeah, yeah.
And I posted that picture that will be on the site of me in the red hoodie. And I don't usually do selfies on Facebook, you know, myself. It's, you know, it's others, it's our dog or whatever. But like I posted that, said, you know what? I'm dusting the dust off of this guitar.
Mm.
I recently had new strings put on my guitars. Been playing a little bit. I got to start playing again, learn some songs, just for myself with no pressure. So I've been working on an idea that's been in my mind for several years, actually about an experience going back to years. I wasn't that great at football or, you know, didn't play a lot, but I just have a story about it. And I'm like, I have about 4 or 5 legal pages of notes for that song. So I'm going to start writing again, going to learn that guitar skill and, you know, pick those skills up again. I got to exercise my brain. So, but yes, I've always loved music. I'm still reading books about music. I just finished the Don Felder book that was written years ago about his life with the Eagles. You know, I still listen to books. I still love listening to songs.
Yeah.
Still have friends in the industry. But I'm just going to start doing it for the heck of it with no pressure and no expectations.
Wonderful.
Just to exercise my mind and my hands, my fingers, and
relearn
the guitar. For the heck of it.
Yeah, and audience, I'm so glad that we got to have Doak on the show because, you know, we have guest after guest after guest on Now Hear This Entertainment who talks about up and leaving whatever town they came from and moving to Nashville and all the success that they've had there. And Doak, you probably know this statistic. Mark Allen Barnett always has it at his fingertips when he'll tell you what the number of people it is that move to Nashville each week and what the number of people it is that move out of Nashville each week. And so, audience, I thought it was important for you to hear a guest, and I love that there was a plot twist for you because it was important for you to hear a guest say, I just got to the point where it was just time for me to leave Nashville and it just wasn't going the way that I wanted it to, because we don't hear those stories, but praise God that Doak had a great plot twist to share with you so it wasn't disappointing and, oh, that's too bad that he left and now here he is, you know, just picking up the guitar again. Doak, as we start winding things down, I've got to ask, for someone who met so many famous people over the years, is there one story, is there one person, and maybe this is in your book, is there someone that you met that really made such a lasting impression on you that you still remember all these years later? And if so, who was that and why are they so memorable?
It's tough to narrow them down to just one, but I just loved all the stories of, you know, no one was given the industry. No one worked harder than a Taylor Swift, a Garth Brooks. I tell you what stands out with those two, when you meet them and so many others, they look you straight in the eye and you're the only person in that room. And they listen to every word you say. And I've had some others like that. Or my friend Nikita Koloff. Nikita was a wrestler. I don't know if you ever followed wrestling in the 80s and 90s. I met Nikita, you know, as a ring announcer for wrestling one night after a match. The guys were going back to the airport for the private plane, and they were calling cabs. I said, I'll take some people up, give them a ride. So Nikita and I and another wrestler, I dropped them off the airport. A month later, I'm backstage when he comes back to town. And, you know, now Nikita's only met probably 300 people since then. And he comes up to me, Doak, thank you so much for that ride to the airport last month. I'm like, God, he remembered that. He remembered my name.
Wow.
Well, since then, over the years, Nikita and I are still very good friends. I've been on a couple of his podcasts. He lives here in Carolina. And he's now a minister, saving other people. It's those kind of people that remember you and gave to you when they didn't have to. And, you know, when we were talking about Mark Allen Barnett, and when I was feeling like a failure, and we were emailing and talking, if I can just read a little quick excerpt from the book, it really helped me.
Please, please.
Mark Allen quoted me. Like I say, when I was, Mark talked me off the ledge many times over through my career. I look at it like this. You made the major leagues. You wrote and were good friends with hit writers, artists, publishers, and producers. You learned all the ins and outs, backs and forths of the industry. You were and are considered a pro and a friend by your peers. You developed a reputation that many people revere today. You are known by one name and remembered very fondly. You're the equivalent of a major league baseball player. They rode the bench, but still played on winning teams. Not everyone who plays makes it to the Hall of Fame, but many are in a fraternity of Major League Baseball. You are that guy. You were replacement players. Back up to Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle, etc. Got to the show. Never got all the way, but earned our own places. You should hear all the guys I grew up with. They are all woulda, coulda, shoulda. I live out their glory days. I'm still living mine. So I tear up whenever I read that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I did go to the big leagues.
That's right.
A lot of us go to the big leagues. Whatever our profession is, whatever it is, it's not just entertainment. And I just remember, yeah, I went up there. I swung, baby. And like so many of us do. And I spoke at a Rotary Club this spring here on Lake Norman. And I talked to people about their identity. What is your identity? Well, I bet it's your job. Everybody started shaking their head or whatever. And I told them a few stories out of this and really just spoke on that identity statement. A lady came up to me afterwards. I'd sold, you know, a dozen books or whatever. She said, I want to buy one. I want you to know that just 2 days ago, said, I recently moved to this area from St. Louis, me and my daughter. 2 days ago, I asked myself, what's my identity now?
Mm.
Now I know.
Wow.
That right there, Bruce, made it worth doing this. And I've heard other stories.
Amazing.
So if I can help people by talking or whatever, going to events, just what's your true identity? That's what you do. You know, you're Tommy's mom or dad. You're this. You're a coach. No, that's what you do. You're a great architect. You're the boss. You own the company. That's what we do. And I know my life could have been a lot different if I'd have just kept it in perspective like that through the years, especially when you go through challenges with your job.
That's
or
right.
Relationships, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just what we do. It's not who we are, Bruce.
Oh, great stuff. Great stuff. And we're going to close with another song that Doak wrote, one called They Broke the Mold. Before I let you go and I play that song, Doak, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Yes, Kathy's father lived with us for a couple years, and he was a Korean War veteran. His legs were messed up. He was told he'll never walk again. He was the sole survivor of his Jeep getting hit by a train in Korea. They striped his legs, told him they were going to take him. He's like, no, you're not. He said, you'll never use them again. He said, yes, I will. He made his way back to North Carolina. He got his GED. This is the Korean War. This is the 50s. This man came up through poverty in a small town in North Carolina. And O.C. got that GED. He got a college education. He became a sheriff. He raced NASCAR. This is a guy, the doctor said, you'll never walk again. And he more than walked in his life. He raced against Petty and Allison in the short tracks here in North Carolina.
Mm.
He became a sheriff, a police chief, an incredible salesperson, raised a great family. He never gave up. He was married almost 70 years to his wife, Kathy's mom, before he passed a couple years ago. I was coming back from Nashville one day and started thinking about him. I'm like, you know what? They broke the mold when they made O.C. And so that's what the story's about. I had several pages of notes. I started talking to Mark Allen about him because Mark knew Kathy very well. So we got to write this song about O.C. It's not a hit. I'm not going to not worried about that. I just got to write it. And so we wrote it. He went to Jay's place on Music Row. He did a guitar vocal. Then he went in to do it better at Jay's place. Jay loved it. Said, I got to add my keyboards to that.
Mm.
So we did it. We did the song. Then a friend of mine knew someone, again, relationships, knew someone who would do a video for about $300 or $400. And so I sent him about 50 different pictures. I used to listen to O.C. tell his stories here at the house. And one of the quotes I have recorded is, like, O.C., you've done a lot. Yeah, I've done a lot through life. Something to that effect at the end of the song. So we included his voice on it. At Christmas morning, 2021, I said, OC, I got a surprise for you. They lived here at our house. And I played that video. And his wife about cried. Kathy was crying watching the video. We played it on our TV in our living room. And he didn't know what to think. He said, I almost cried. I'm like, darn it, OC, I was going for the tears. I was hoping to make you cry. I got to go back to work on that. And when he passed away in 2022, we played it several times at his at the visitation, you know, for the funeral. And it's something that I'm proud of because I was able to give something to the family and a way to remember a veteran. Veterans Day's coming up. So, you know, and, you know, all of that good stuff. But that's something I'm very proud of, and I'm proud that my friend and your friend, Mark Allen Barnett, was a co-writer on that. And that is, they broke the mold when they made OC, because, man, those veterans, those people from that era, they were tough.
And how?
So that I was able to get all those feelings out.
And audience, there's a video for that too on the website that I mentioned before. I'm going to give you that website again in just a minute. But when you get on the videos page, I had mentioned before that you could see the I Talk to God video on there. But the Broke the Mold video is on there as well. So be sure you look for that. Doak, so great to have you on the show. Thank you for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Congratulations on the book. I really enjoyed the conversation. Appreciate you making time to be on the show today.
Bruce, thank you for making a difference in the world for creators and your listeners, you know, and having your priorities right. I know you're a great man, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. It really does. Really does. And folks, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to songwriter and author Doak Turner. Visit acrazyjourneybook.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Once you land on his site, you can order the book as well as access more information and pictures. In addition, you can learn more about Doak himself on that site. Plus, there is a section there for audio and video for his original music. As I said earlier, look at the bottom of the website for the Facebook and Twitter logos so you can follow him on there. In addition, Doak's music can be found on SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that this show is available on. Let Doak know that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Folks, honestly, I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you have made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Doak and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 and a half years without missing once by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 558. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song written by Doak Turner. This is the one he just talked about. It's called They Broke the Mold.
Born in 1931, small Carolina town. Raised in a three-room shack. Was the toughest kid around. OC is what they called him. Lived through the Great Depression. Went to school without shoes. But never let life get him. Was the local boxing champ, but he paid for every bruise. Never let bad circumstance be used as an excuse. OC is the hero, cause he'd never give up. Google has his picture right beside the word tough. Been through hell here on earth, but he's first on heaven's roll. When God made OC, he broke the mold. When
When Korea hit in 52, duty called his name, was the sole survivor when his Jeep was hit by that train. Doctor said he'd never walk, lost hearing in his left eye too, but he showed him there's no limit what determined men can do. Flipping houses, fixing cars, with his daughter and his wife. With all that he's been through, it's a miracle he survived. OC is a hero, cause he'd never give up. Google has his picture right beside the word tough. Been through hell here on earth, but he's first on heaven's road. When God made OC, he broke the mold. Cancer hasn't got him yet, PSTD can't slow him down. Got baptized at 86 at Elkins Baptist in our town. Still the toughest man around, everybody knows his name. But he's always got a smile, and the light shines from his face. OC is the hero, cause he'd never give up. Google's got his picture right beside the word tough. Been through hell here on earth, but he's first on heaven's roll. When God made OC, he broke the mold.